today on the Beginner Photography Podcast.
No one else was covering this topic, right? Like, it was maybe one or two other posts out there had three or four suggestions, but I did 19. And I'm like, now anytime someone asks, I can just give them this. But guess what? That page started ranking so well because I found a need that a lot of people have, and that it covered a wide range of queries.
Welcome to the Beginner Photography Podcast with Raymond Hatfield, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your photography skills. Raymond interviews the world's top photographers in their field to ask questions that will get you taking better photos today. Now, with you as always, husband, father, home brewer, LA Dodger fan, and Indianapolis wedding photographer, Raymond Hatfield.
Hey, everybody. It is me. I'm Raymond. I'm back, as always, your host here on the Beginner Photography Podcast. Today's interview is a good one. I'm going to try something new where we're pretty much just going to hop right into the interview today. But first, I did want to talk about the Facebook group. The Facebook group is growing, okay? The Facebook group is the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group, which if you want to join, you can just search Facebook for Beginner Photography Podcast, and you can find the Facebook group there. It has become a place where people can come. They can share their photos. They can ask questions. And it's a safe place for them to do so. A lot of people have shown up and admittedly said that they had no intention of sharing, but just kind of creeping in the background. But after seeing how the group reacts and responds and how kind of welcoming it is, they felt open enough to share their photos and ask for critiques and be more involved and in turn learned more things about photography, just in a much quicker sense. And it's been wonderful to see everybody in the group growing as photographers. So if you want to join the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group, I would welcome you to come on in. Again, just search Facebook for Beginner Photography Podcast and you will see a link or the option to join the group. I got three questions for you, though. And once you answer them and confirm that you are a human, you are allowed in. And if you don't answer those three questions, I will not let you in. It is that simple. There you go. So, all right, guys, we're going to get into today's interview with Corey Potter. Now, if that name sounds familiar, he was back. He was on the podcast back 2 years ago. I cannot believe it's been 2 years since I talked to Corey. Corey is just an SEO master. This guy knows his stuff when it comes to SEO. And what I love about Corey's approach is that it is no nonsense. It is not like you do this one thing, you're going to the top of Google. What he says is actionable tips. And what I hope that you get out of this interview is that SEO is not one size fits all. It is not, you know, you just do this one thing and you're good. You really do have to put in a lot of work to rank well in Google and within SEO. So don't think that SEO is going to be something that is going to take you and transform, you know, your website overnight, because it's not. I've been working on it for years. Corey's been working on it for years. And it always changes, so it takes time. But once you get down the fundamentals, like Corey is going to talk about today, you're setting yourself up for just the right path. That's it. We're going to get on into this interview right now with Corey Potter. Today's return guest is Corey Potter, photographer turned SEO master, focusing on helping photographers understand search engine optimization and providing an incredible amount of help. Corey is here today to talk about mistakes that photographers make when blogging. Corey, man, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, when I was doing research for this episode, I looked back to the last time that you were on, and it was actually 2 years ago. Next week.
That's crazy. I know. I saw the recording because that it got shared recently and I was watching it. And I was like, whoa, I was still in my old office at my old desk. It's like been so long.
I know. It was two houses ago for me. Yeah. Two houses ago.
That's crazy.
Ridiculous to, you know, when you think about how long you've kind of been doing something, when you're just kind of in it day in and day out, when things change, you don't even recognize it. So,
and look at that studio you've got now. You had your bed in the background in the other one.
I did. I know. It's kind of embarrassing to think about. Now I got like Wi-Fi lights that I can turn on and off with this cool little switch here. Even change that color in the background, pink. Now we're going to go back to blue. But yeah, no, this is, it's definitely a new setup. It's definitely a whole lot of fun, and I'm excited to get in and talk to you today, because obviously blogging is kind of one of those things to where I think when you first get started, you're like, yes, like I'm gonna have a website. It's gonna be so much fun. And then you realize immediately that, oh, wait, I'm not getting the leads that I wanted to. What do I need to be doing? And then people think, oh, maybe I should start blogging. And then they start blogging client sessions, and then they don't know what to do after that. So today I know that you're going to share a ton of great information. But before I start asking questions, I want to know, is all the info that you're going to share today, does it matter what website platform we're using, and our free options like Wix? Okay. And when should people consider upgrading?
Yeah. So, I mean, it does matter. So that's one of these things where a lot of people are telling everyone Google's platform agnostic. It doesn't really matter. And like, to some extent, that's like got an element of truth to it, but it's not really true. And the thing is, if you think about like a camera and a lens, if you said, does it matter which lens I use? Well, I mean, you can still take pictures no matter which lens you use, right? But it absolutely matters which lens you use. It's going to change how you, your perspective when you look through the camera. It's going to change the compression. It's going to change the, all kinds of things are going to change depending on which lens you put on your camera. It's the same thing with a website platform. It's like, if you use any lens, you'll be able to take a picture. If you use any platform, you'll be able to build a website. You can potentially rank in Google, but there's going to be some that are the right website for the right job. And that's why I don't like, it's hard to recommend one specific platform, because there are a lot of different applications. There are people who want to do volume sports and need like a proofing system for lots of different people. There are people who do wedding and portrait photography who need, you know, more of a portfolio website. And there are a lot of different options out there. But as far as blogging goes, they're really, WordPress is the king of blogging. Absolutely. Like, that's why it was invented long ago. And there are other platforms where you can blog. Squarespace is an example. Squarespace's blogging platform doesn't even compare to the power of WordPress's blogging platform, but you can do it and you can rank blog posts on Squarespace. And, you know, there are several others. Like, Showit uses WordPress for the blogging side. But if you're talking about PhotoBiz, if you're talking about Zenfolio, they have blog options, but their blog options are very limited, extremely difficult to export. If you ever want to grow, technically they have lots of problems with how the pages are indexed and all kinds of things that have to do with more of the technical side of SEO. So I would say like the three platforms that I feel are the best to use if you're planning on blogging are going to be WordPress, absolutely number one. Showit, I kind of give them a pass because they use WordPress for the blog side. And then Squarespace, if you have to, you can get away with a blog on Squarespace. If you don't have one of those, you probably should upgrade before you put a lot of effort into blogging.
That's good to know. I, as somebody who uses Squarespace and as somebody who has said that they're going to switch to WordPress from Squarespace for the past 2 years and has not, I can tell you that I've definitely encountered a lot of those limitations when it comes to blogging, and it can be frustrating. So it's good to hear that, you know, that other options might work better. But I really like that analogy between the camera and the lens. That's something that I never have thought of before. And as somebody who's like not an expert on the computer side of things, I really appreciate you having knowledge of both and being able to make that very clear and understandable. But I mentioned maybe I realized that maybe a lot of people haven't been listening to the podcast for 2+ years, and maybe they didn't hear your first interview. So even though I gave you that, that introduction, can you kind of share how you got started? Because like I said, you were a photographer turned SEO master. Can you talk about how you got into photography and then the transition as well?
Sure. I mean, when I got into photography, it was mostly just I had no idea. It's funny. It really started with a Google search. That's so ironic. I never made that connection until just now. But my wife said we needed to have engagement photos. And I was like, that sounds ridiculous. I've never heard of that. No one does that. She's like, yeah, it's really a thing. And I was like, okay, I'll go to Google and search for engagement photography or whatever. And I did. And I looked at some photographers locally who were doing engagement sessions. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I like this. This is cool how they're telling stories and showing connections and relationships. And I was like, well, I'll send a few emails. So I sent some emails and I connected with a photographer who actually needed an assistant at the time. Then this was like 10, 11 years ago. So it wasn't like everyone's emailing photographers for assistance all the time like it is now. And so she was like, I really need someone to help. Are you interested? And I was like, sure. I don't have a camera. She's like, you can use mine. And I'm like, okay, cool. And so I went to a few weddings and I was an assistant and I just picked it up really fast and got into wedding photography. I was like, I was going to do another business. I was actually doing SEO and websites before then. And I'm like, this is a great business. And I just built a wedding photography business really quickly. I think having a WordPress website before most people did, but everybody else was still using Flash websites, and being able to optimize it pretty well because of my knowledge of that space had a huge impact on being able to grow the business really fast at that time. And so that's what I did. Did a wedding photography business for about 8 or 9 years. And then we had 3 kids and I was like, well, not sure I want to do 40 weddings a year. And my wife wanted to spend more time taking care of the kids and she wasn't able to help with some of the day-to-day stuff. So I was like, I need to build a business that I can grow myself and scale with a team. And that was just better for our family. So that's where I am now.
I love it. So are you still shooting weddings?
I'm not. The only thing I'm doing right now, I sold all of my Canon gear and I bought an Olympus OMD even whatever something Mark II. It's like a really nice mirrorless camera that I'm using for vlogging, taking pictures of the family, all that kind of stuff. I'm excited about that part of photography again, actually getting more into video and kind of like, how does photography relate to video? That's been really fun.
Right. Yeah. That's something that I focused on a lot in 2018 as well. And it all came from the GoPro. I swear if people are like listening to this, they're going to think that like everything that I talk about is just like a giant GoPro ad. But no, honestly, like the GoPro is just kind of made, you know,
GoPro.
There you go. I look at like my cameras as like this professional work. You know, and it's hard for me to separate them between like, oh, I'll do personal stuff here with, and then do professional stuff here still with the camera. And I found that the GoPro for me, at least as like a working professional who uses cameras day to day, it's just really fun. You can throw it in your pocket. You never have to worry about it. You know, everybody's always worried about like the best camera bag and protection for their expensive cameras, and the GoPro, I just throw it right in my pocket and it does everything. It's so much fun. And then the software on top of it just takes care of all the editing. I don't have to do anything, which is the best part for sure. That was supposed to be a segue.
So buy a GoPro. End of
Yeah. I was trying to think of how that could be a segue to get back into like technology and software and blogging. But I couldn't think of anything right there the last second. So we'll just end it there. But today we are talking about blogging. And it's obviously a topic that a lot of photographers, maybe those specifically listening to this podcast, are going to look at negatively. I remember when I first started, you know, there's that idea that a picture is worth 1,000 words, but it's really not, right? Especially like today's day and age. I mean, it can, but chances are yours are not going to be worth 1,000 words. So blogging is going to help us get found. It's going to help us get new clients. It's going to help us grow as photographers. So let's kind of talk about from your side of the table, why is blogging so important for photographers?
Sure. Well, I'll tell you right off the bat that blogging, there's kind of a misconception about what blogging actually means. So there are different definitions that you could apply to blogging. And I think that it kind of depends on how you're looking at it. That could really influence your, you know, preconception of like, is this a negative thing? Do I hate it or do I love it? Where when I say blogging is important, what I mean is creating new relevant content to people who are looking to hire you. That's important, right? But if it's like keeping a personal photo journal on your website, if that's what you consider blogging, that's probably not as important. So I think it really, it's hard because people have this idea of blogging. They think of someone like, this is kind of an old example, but I think of like Caitlin James, whenever she was blogging 5 times a week for 8 years in a row, like hardly missing a day. And that was like an example of extreme. I'm a blogger who, you know, I'm a photographer who's a blogger. Like that's real blogging. But there's also using your website to create new content. And it doesn't have to be in blog format, but a blog is important because it's an easy and natural tool to create new content. So you can just easily take, whether it's a client session or a set of tips or whatever, and post it on your blog in a way that feels natural and easy. And it automatically is new content that can be indexed and make your site more relevant.
Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit. So when you say there that posting things like tips for clients to potentially find us, that's important. Posting like a personal photo blog, that's not so important. When you say those things are or are not important, are you speaking specifically to Google or what do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's really good because there's so many different reasons that you may want to blog. And I think that's one big mistake that photographers have is they think, I'm going to blog, I hate it, but I'm going to do it because it's good for SEO. Yeah. And that is not always the case. Hang on one second here. I need to turn off these notifications. Sorry.
No, that's fine. They can get pesky, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fine. I find that too. It's like you're in the zone, like you're having this nice conversation. We got eye contact and all of a sudden something pops up. It's like, Mark replied to your, I don't care.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Okay. Yeah. So I guess whenever people blog only for SEO, they're forgetting about all the other potential good reasons that you could blog. So, you know, I mentioned already, like one of the most important things is that you're creating new important content. We'll call it cornerstone content. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more. But you could also create content to support your cornerstone content. You can create natural local relevance. You can network with venues, vendors. I've got some notes here. So we can network with venues, vendors, local entities, feature your clients, be seen as an authority, show potential clients consistency and variety, show that you're in demand, develop a style and voice. Like there's so many reasons that you might blog. And actually, I was at a talk at Imaging last year, and this guy was talking about how blogging changed his life. And if you've probably heard of Seth Godin.
Yes.
He has said like blogging is one of the most important things you can do for personal development. He has a blog where he blogs something every day, I think. And so there is this idea that like a personal blog can help you to understand yourself and why you're a photographer and what your style is. And for beginner photographers, it could be that using your blog to put into words the reason that you're taking pictures could have a huge impact on growing as a photographer that people admire, not only for your photos, but also for what you believe. So there is value in that kind of personal blogging. But what I'm talking about, it's not as important. I'm talking about for SEO. So when it comes to search engine optimization, a lot of people think if I blog once a week, that's going to help me have better rankings automatically. And that's just not true.
Currently what I think. So yeah. I'm glad that we're having this conversation.
Yeah. And it goes around a lot where like, if you have a lot of frequent updates, Google loves fresh content, kind of like Google does potentially like fresh content for certain queries. For most photographers, that's just not something that's going to have any impact on ranking. So the thing is, like if you're just blogging frequently because you think it's good for Google, it's probably not helping you. Now, to some extreme, it's like it's not important until it is. And that's kind of how it is with a lot of things with SEO. Like if you stop blogging and haven't blogged for 3 years, it's probably going to have some impact on your overall ranking, maybe. But there's a lot of there's side effects. I feel like I'm going like all over the place, but there's there's side effects to blogging regularly. And those go back into some of those reasons that I said earlier. But whenever you blog regularly, you are showing that you're in demand. You're putting out more work that can build momentum. People are sharing it. People are linking to it, all of this kind of stuff. So it's not like you shouldn't blog, you know, at some rhythm. I think that rhythm is important. And I typically recommend to people make it at least 4 times per year. That's the bare minimum. But then I recommend at least once per month putting out some kind of relevant content. And then if you have other things to fill it in, like you have client work, like I said earlier, sometimes you're building content just to support your big cornerstone content.
Okay, so that's a great segue into what cornerstone content is. If the bare minimum is to blog 4 times a year, I'm assuming that those 4 blogs need to be really important. And exactly. Is that what we talk about when we're talking about cornerstone content?
Yeah, it is. And keep in mind that those 4 pieces of content don't necessarily have to be blog posts. A lot of people get caught up. Is it a page or a post? It doesn't really matter to a search engine. On most platforms, a page and a post are treated exactly the same way by a search engine. Maybe on some platforms, that may not be the case. On the ones I mentioned earlier, the important ones, it's all the same. So if you make it a page on your site or a post on your site, it's still a piece of cornerstone content if it meets this requirement. Basically, let's give it a little bit of backstory. Why is there cornerstone content? So Google only wants to show 1 result per domain for a particular query. Now, there may be some cases. People are like, no way, I've got 2 results on the first page. It can happen. Like, you can get 2 results from your domain for some queries, especially if they're not very competitive or if you are like an extreme authority, like you've taken over that query. Query being just something that someone is searching for. So Google wants to show 1 result per domain. They want to vary it up. They want to make sure it's fair. No one can have a monopoly and have like 100 pages on their site about a topic and take the first 10 pages of Google search. That would be ridiculous, right? So typically they want to show 1 result per domain. So if Google came to you and they said, hey, Raymond, I know you're an authority about wedding photography in Indianapolis, but we want to show just 1 page of your site whenever someone types in wedding photographer Indianapolis. Which one would you like us to show? And you had to answer with 1 single page. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about, hey, someone is out there searching for wedding photographer Indianapolis. What do they want to know? And where does that information live on my site? And what page would serve their intent? And that's whatever page you answer with to Google, that's your cornerstone content.
So like my homepage is cornerstone content. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Your homepage can be cornerstone content. And usually for photographers, it makes sense for your homepage to be the biggest piece of cornerstone content for your biggest term. It gets complicated because a lot of people have multiple specialties and putting all of that on your homepage doesn't always make sense. But right. You could have an internal page for families. So our highfieldphotography.com/family, and that could be the cornerstone page for families. Or you could have a blog post about the top 10 wedding venues in Indianapolis, and that could be a piece of cornerstone content when someone is searching for wedding venues in Indianapolis, places to get married in Indianapolis, or terms like that.
Okay, cool. So I understand that now cornerstone content is obviously very important. And I liked, once again, your analogy of thinking of Google coming to me and saying, hey, if somebody were to search for this one thing, what would you show them? Because that does kind of change things up a bit. I think I've kind of had this idea, since I don't know how it looks behind the curtain, I just kind of do a lot of guessing, I guess.
Yeah.
And one of those things is, well, if I just put out more content on various topics, then one of those is going to be bound to be found a lot in Google. It's going to start ranking, and then I can put more effort into that. But there has to be a more efficient way than putting out hundreds of pieces of content every year and just hoping that one of them sticks. What do you suggest for that?
Ooh, that's a really good question. And honestly, it's one of those things where if you have professional grade tools, it makes it a little bit easier. There are tools out there like what I use. Ahrefs is a tool where I can do all kinds of research on competitors, find out what they're ranking for, find out which pages on their site are performing the best for them, get a list of topics that way. But if you don't have that kind of thing, you can still do manual research where you go to Google, you type in a phrase. Let's say I just want to go after a bigger phrase like wedding photographer Indianapolis. Well, if I just go to Google and type that in, Google's going to give me a lot of clues about what kinds of things I should cover on that topic. It's going to have potentially suggested searches at the bottom. It might have an autofill suggestion at the top. It might have websites that are not necessarily home pages that have information that I can go and look and see, why is this page ranking? There's a lot of that kind of like competitive analysis and just regular SERP, like search engine result page analysis, that I can do to figure out what Google wants to show. I think that's a good thing. I really do think that it comes down to being an expert in your industry and knowing what your clients want. So one good thing you can do is look back at your emails, look back at your consultations and say, what are people asking me over and over again? And how can I write something authoritative and comprehensive on that question? I know for me, whenever I did consults a lot with as a wedding photographer, a lot of my clients were like, we don't know where we want to do an engagement session. We know we want to do engagement photos. We have no idea. Can you make some suggestions? So guess what I did? I made a blog post that was 19 of the best places to do engagement sessions in Columbia, South Carolina. Well, no one else was covering this topic, right? Like it was maybe one or two other posts out there had three or four suggestions, but I did 19. And I'm like, now anytime someone asks, I can just give them this. But guess what? That page started ranking so well because I found a need that a lot of people have. And that it covered a wide range of queries, a lot of things that people are searching for, where to take pictures, where to take engagement pictures, where to do outdoor engagement sessions, all of these things that people are searching. That post did a really good job of covering that. So as far as like, you know, when I say make four pieces of content a year, that piece of content alone, still that's like 3 years old on my blog and I haven't updated it since. And I think last time I checked, it brought in 400 clicks in a month.
Oh my gosh.
Just for one piece of content. And so like, if you could do that kind of thing three times a year, imagine in 3 years, you could have, what is that? That's like 5,000 clicks a month. If you did that for 3 years straight and only four times a year.
Hey, Raymond here, and we will get back to today's show in just a moment. You know, for the past several years, I have paid for an expensive, far too expensive, album design software that I didn't even love because, well, there was no other choice, to be honest. And then one day, I got an email from CloudSpot, which is my client gallery system, announcing that they built an album builder in to their gallery software. What? Now, myself or my clients can build a beautiful album and have it shipped right to them. And on top of all that, this feature is included for free. Now, after building a few albums to test it out, I canceled my expensive dedicated album software membership right away, and I have not looked back. CloudSpot is built by photographers for photographers, and they listen to their customers to improve their service all the time. You can join the CloudSpot family by learning more and signing up over at deliverphotos.com today. You can even build albums with a free account. How awesome is that? So sign up now over at deliverphotos.com. Now, let's go ahead and get on back to today's interview. Yeah, that's insane. That's quite a bit. That's quite a bit for sure. So my next question for you is, when it came to coming up with the 19 places to do engagement sessions, was there a reason behind 19? Like, because that's kind of where I get stuck, because I'll look at a piece and be like, oh, like 20 places to, you know, get engaged in Indy. And it's like, well, if I'm going to do 21, right? And I feel like that number matters, but does it really?
It can matter. There's a lot of studies out there that are really interesting about like click-through rate psychology and whether you should use odd numbers and which numbers and this kind of stuff. I have researched some of that, and 19, I think, was intentional, but it doesn't really matter. The idea, there's this technique out there in SEO called the skyscraper method. You could even just go Google skyscraper SEO and you'll get an idea of what this is all about. But basically, it is you find a piece of content out there and then you create something 10 times better. So like you're looming over them. And that was the idea for me, is like the best one out there had 3 or 5 or 7 or something. I'm like, I've got to have more than that for this to be comprehensive.
But I can't do 70.
No, there probably aren't. Well, there could be 70. That's an interesting thing, because in my group recently, I was like, what if instead of going wide, you just spent a long time going really, really deep on something? Like, what if I did find 70 places? Like, I found these random parking lots and, you know, little private or public areas that are like wooded, like just random places all over the city. And I made a blog post about each one, or one big blog post with all of them. I could literally become known as the go-to source for where to do portrait sessions or whatever in my city. I mean, that builds authority as a photographer. Other photographers are going to start emailing me and asking me questions, which might kind of get annoying after a while, but I mean, the idea is like, if other people are sending my resource to their clients, that could be really powerful. I could start getting more backlinks and all that kind of stuff. So you know, that's the idea. It's like, I just, for 19, I just like wrote down everyone I could think of where I had some sort of picture to put on there. but it could be any number. I have another post that's five of my favorite wedding venues in Colombia, or seven. I think it's seven, but it's not very many. And it's like that post is also doing about as well as the other post. And it's just because no one was covering that topic very well. In some cities like Indianapolis, you're probably going to have several people who have already created a venue list, but there are probably a lot of listeners out there who don't have anyone who has put out a list of places to take family sessions or engagement sessions or maternity sessions or whatever, or they haven't put out a good venue list, and you could just put a few and already be the authority.
Wow. So this obviously is a lot of work, right? There's no denying that there's a lot of work that needs to be put in for SEO. And coming up with a list of places to get married or have a portrait session, I think is probably a great place to start. But what if you are a sports or high volume photographer? Do you have any examples of what these other photographers could be posting as cornerstone content?
Yeah, and that's a really good question I've been thinking a lot about. I've been trying to come up with examples in like every industry. And there's a large variety for anything, and it takes some creative thinking. But I'll give a few examples. So I'll start with like newborn photographers often have a really hard time. They like do the same thing in studio a lot, and they don't know what to do. There's a million ideas. But one piece of success that I've seen from one studio is that they did cake smash sessions at 1 year. And this may be that people are like, well, I'm a newborn, I don't do that. But if you do something like that, I had one client who in a major metro ranked in the first position for cake smash sessions and started getting maybe 30 inquiries a week from just cake smash sessions.
Wow.
Because for some reason, a lot of people were searching for it in that city. And so, you know, it's like sometimes there are things that are a tangent of what you do. Now, it could be that it's not that direct. If you're like a high school senior photographer, one of the things that I would do if I were a senior photographer, because there's only so much you can cover, like locations to do senior sessions, what to wear to a senior session, how to prepare for your senior session, when should you do your senior, like, you know, you get those kinds of questions, right? But once you've done all that, what do you do next? Well, I mean, think about the things that are important to people who are in high school and think about how you can write something that's relevant to local high school seniors. And one example, or their families, right? So one example I thought of a long time ago, and I actually did a little bit of work around it and started to see a lot of results really quickly, was I put up on my website, again, this was a really long time ago, but I put a high school football schedule for my region. So like all the major high schools in my area, I put up the football schedule on a page. You would not believe how many people were searching for a high school football schedule.
Really?
It was insane. But like no one would think of that on their photography site. Like, right? You wouldn't think I need to put the football schedule up, but you could, even though it's already posted somewhere else, put some pictures to games you've been to, you know, show that you care about the things that they care about, the community. There's so many other examples like that where you just have to get creative. So that's the thing I would do with volume sports or high school seniors. I'd start to think about what do these people care about that's related to what I do and how can I cover something that people are searching for?
Wow. So, okay. Let me kind of form this question in my head real quick. We kind of have an idea of at least where to get started, right? I know I wrote a blog last year at your suggestion of like 10 unique Indianapolis wedding venues, I believe it was. I went through, I think it was Ahrefs, looked for search volume, found that unique wedding venues was not, like it had a good amount of search, no results for it. So I wrote that blog and immediately was like, hey, good stuff. So now we have that, right? We have that piece of content. I wrote it. It's on the blog. I did the work. I went to the venues, took pictures, met with the people. We got the blog. Now it's time to press publish.
Yeah.
This is one where it gets scary. Okay. So it's like, is this ready? How do we know when we're ready to press publish? And then when we do, what's next? Do we just wait? Hey, Raymond here, and I know that diving into the world of editing can feel like navigating a maze, especially if you're just starting out. So that's why I created our exclusive collection of 52 Lightroom presets, absolutely free. While presets can dramatically enhance your photos, they're not a one-click solution. They're a starting point for your creativity and an opportunity to learn and grow in your editing skills. These presets work seamlessly with all versions of Lightroom, whether you're on a computer or using Lightroom Mobile. And they're designed to simplify your editing process, adding that professional touch to your photos while giving you the flexibility to fine-tune them to your taste. So if you're ready to take your photos to the next level, head over to freephotographypresets.com right now and get editing today.
Great questions. So first of all, how do you know when it's ready? There are a lot of things here that like can't get into all of on-page SEO here, but if you're using WordPress and you use something like Yoast, it will be a really good guideline. Now, I'm not saying you need to get green lights and follow all the check marks exactly, but it's a good checklist of things that you should be looking at. You should be making sure that some sort of phrase that people are actually typing is in the title of the post, probably used exactly or some close variation at least a few times in the post, and that you're really just answering the question. Like if you feel that you're doing a good job answering the question, go ahead and publish. I think that a lot of people get caught up on, I need to make this perfect before I publish. Let me give you an example of something personally that I did recently. I'm starting to get into YouTube a little bit, right? And this is so tangent here. If you're not using video in 2019, you are missing a huge opportunity. And vlogging is the new blogging. And so all of the stuff we're talking about can be applied to making videos about the topics instead of just regular text posts, okay? Anyway, end of that tangent. So back to the fact that I was getting into YouTube and trying to figure out like, how do I grow a following on YouTube? Well, I found that there's a lot of people out there who are just like regurgitating the same stuff. Be consistent, have high quality content, keep people watching. Like, okay, yes, we all know the things you should do to make good videos, but like, how do I actually tactically build an audience? No one was covering it. I'm like, this is so weird. So I made a blog post and it was like, I had a brainstorming session. I wrote down, ironically, 19 again, ideas for how
starting to sense a pattern.
I guess my brain just stops at 19 for some reason. But I came up with ideas for how I thought I could gain at least 100 subscribers with one idea. So I wrote them all down, put it in a list, and I just did a draft of it on my site on WordPress. And I published it as soon as I even just had the list. I didn't fill it out. I didn't write an explanation for each one, just a list. Within 2 weeks, that was ranking on the first page of Google for how to get 100 subscribers on YouTube.
Wow.
And that gets like 800 searches a month, not to mention all the variations around it. It's like a search volume of around 4,000 or 5,000 searches a month for topics related to that. And I was ranking on the first page with just a list, nothing else, a bulleted list. So the idea is like, get that up there. And then what I did is I went into Search Console and I found exactly how people were typing those questions, how to get 100 subscribers. There's so many other things that they were typing to find that my post was coming up that Google thought it was relevant for. And I started to take those things out of Search Console and plug them back into my post. And now I've started to build out the post. I put explanations under each one, and it's just becoming a bigger and bigger piece of content. But that's something you have to realize, is that a content doesn't have to be done once you hit publish. You can always come back and edit, add more to your 19 places, it can become 37 places. It's just maybe be careful about how you put the URL so that it doesn't have the number in the URL so that you can come back and update later. You can always change the title, but the URL, if you change it, you have to do a redirect. That's just a little technical SEO tip there. But anyway, I guess that's the idea. Like, don't get caught up in, is this ready to publish? If you think that it's good enough that it will help someone, go ahead and publish and then come back and keep tweaking it later. Search Console is going to be your friend. So if you don't have Search Console set up, and I've found that even among established photographers, probably maybe like 30 or 40% of people have Search Console set up. So there's probably a lot of people out there who don't. This is a huge tip you can take away right now. Go to Google, type in Search Console, you know, figure out how to set it up. I have a blog post that's coming up very soon. I'll get it to you so you can put it in the show notes.
Yes.
It's like exactly how you set it up. And then once you have that, it's going to show you every time that your site shows up in search engines, whenever someone types something. So you'll be able to like filter and figure out on this page, here's what people are typing to find me, and using that to repolish your post is really valuable.
So I think that this is a little bit advanced, and I'm not sure how many people are going to like this next question or not, how many people are this next question is going to apply to, but I want to know, so I'm going to ask it. When it comes to Search Console, it sounds like Search Console will help you optimize your website and the things that you should put on what's already there. But when it comes to, you mentioned how many people were searching for the YouTube list, right? Like how to grow. Right. You said there was a search volume of 4,000 or 8,000 people a month. How do we find those things? And how can we get new ideas for blog posts to write?
Yeah. So I'll give you a few exact tips here, but I will tell you that whenever I said those numbers, a lot of it did come from Search Console. When I see that I got to the first page, I could take the number of impressions and see how many people actually did that. And then I have enough expertise to say, okay, if that's true, then we can take these other subjects and kind of make a guess about how many it is. I also use Ahrefs to find that volume. So there are tools like Ahrefs that will give you really good data about how many searches per month and the relative difficulty of ranking for that term. But
do you have to put in those search terms yourself? Like you have to figure it out?
You have to just like put something in and then like it'll give you some suggestions and you can kind of click through the suggestions. It'll give you more suggestions and it's kind of like figuring it all out and just starting to build a list that way. But another thing you can do if you don't have Ahrefs, which is really expensive, is use a free Chrome extension called Keywords Everywhere. And it just, you add it onto Chrome and then you turn it on. And then whenever you go to Google, if you type in a keyword, it's going to tell you an estimated search volume right beside the search bar. It'll also give you suggested or estimated search volumes for all of the suggested things that Google's suggesting and auto suggests and in the bottom of the page. So that's a good way to start building a list. And then a lot of times those suggestions that Google is making are extremely valuable. And I think using that, there's also some other free tools out there that you can at least do like a short trial, or you can, you know, get a little bit of data. Moz, I can't remember what they renamed it to. I think it's called Link Explorer now. It used to be Open Site Explorer. You can go on there and find your competitor's top pages as far as what's been linked to. And if something's been linked to, it's probably worth sharing. So it's probably a good potential post. BuzzSumo is another tool that you can go and find like which topics. Now this is, it's hard because some photography sites won't have any data on there, but like there's tools like this. If you go and just like Google competitive analysis and start finding people who are ranking well and seeing what they are writing about, and then these tools will give you some idea about how many visits are coming through those things. Use all of that as a way to guess and estimate, and then use your intuition to take it to the next level. So the numbers you're going to get from any of these tools other than Search Console is not going to be exact. It's going to just give you an idea of like, compared to this, this gets a lot more search volume, and that's a good enough thing to tell you I should probably prioritize that over this.
Okay, so before I move on to my next question, I just realized that we didn't finish up that last one.
Yeah.
When coming up with a plan, after you press publish. So what do we do?
Yeah, so this is really interesting. I was reading an article recently that said it was really kind of like they were trying to go after a controversial topic where a lot of people say content is king. And all the stuff I've been saying so far makes it sound like that's true. Cornerstone content is so important. Content. That's the reason for blogging. Well, this article was saying content is not king, it's queen. And the king is promotion. So what you do with your content after you write it is way more important than the content itself. And I've seen this over and over and over again be true for a lot of people, where if I promote something properly, it's going to work significantly better than if I would have spent more time creating more content. And like you said in the beginning, a lot of people build something, they think people are going to come, nothing happens, it's crickets, and they're like, okay, well, this doesn't work. And the fact is, you have to have a promotion plan. So let me give you some examples of what I would do as far as promoting content. So let's say I take that 19 best places to do your engagement session in Columbia. I'm just going to use that one as my example. Well, first of all, I have to think about who are the amplifiers for this topic? Who is going to be willing to talk about this? Who would it benefit to talk about this, or whose audience would get value out of this? And first of all, it seems like it's mostly just photographers, right? So like photographers aren't going to share my blog post. Some might, but most aren't going to, because they're going to write their own post or have their own. They don't want to send them to a competitor. But there are other people as well. You could think about wedding planners, for example. They might want to tell people or write a blog post featuring you, or you know, just share your blog post about places to do engagement sessions. Who else might share an engagement? It could be a ring store. Like, you know, they're like, you just got your ring. So, or a jewelry store, whatever. Now you are thinking about taking pictures with your ring. Look at this, or whatever. So there's a lot of like people who might be willing to share it because it fits their audience. Like, if you want to get advanced, going and looking for similar topics. So engagement session stories, proposal stories, things like that, and looking to see who shared them on Twitter, again, using something like BuzzSumo or Ahrefs, and then figuring out, okay, why did this person share it? Would they be willing to share mine as well? Because that's kind of advanced. But the idea is you're trying to find someone who's interested in this. And it goes like, it's sometimes easier. So whenever you find the high school football schedule thing, if you make a post that's like really easy to read, interactive, much better than all the ones on the news sites where you get like 18,000 pop-ups and can't even read it, and you're like, the local news station might share this, or the high school itself might share this, or whatever. So like, who would want to share it? That's the first thing. You've got to find those amplifiers. Whenever it's a client session, it's the client themselves, the client's parents, the other vendors that were involved in that wedding, or if it's not a wedding, if it's just a regular session, other vendors who might have been involved in the clothing they were wearing or any kind of location that you were shooting at. They might want to showcase their location. All kinds of things like that could be amplifiers, right? So that's the first thing. After that, I think a lot of people don't realize that they should be promoting their content the same way that they would promote their business in general. So for example, I would run Facebook ads for a really good piece of content just to get people to look at the content, for nothing else, like not for conversions. I mean, obviously that's hopefully a side effect, but the idea is like, if I can just get people to see this, then I know they're going to love it. So first of all, you got to make sure the content is something good that people enough, love, right? But once you know that's true and you're like, I know people would love this, I know people would share this, I just got to get in front of them. Run Facebook ads just for that content. No catch. You know, people love that kind of stuff. That's when ads work so well, is whenever it's like, they're not selling me anything. They just want to give me good stuff. Okay. They're paying money to give me good stuff. I like this guy. And so that's the idea. I would run Facebook ads. I would set up a retargeting pixel and potentially get them into a funnel with Facebook ads. You know, there's probably 50 different things you could do. Like, for example, you might, if you did become the expert on locations for places to do sessions, you might get interviewed by someone, like get on a podcast like this. So my content might be a course about blogging, and I'm here talking to you to amplify my content around blogging, right? So the idea is, if you can get featured, get interviewed, find anyone who's willing to talk about it or talk about why you're the expert, all of those things are going to help your content really kind of get those roots, get those links, get those shares. And that's what you're going for.
So do you need to do something like this every time you hit publish? So let's say, so I'll be totally transparent. My plan for this next year was, I don't know if it'll change after this interview that we're having right now, but I wrote a list of 52 different ideas to blog about for brides, that would come out every week. On top of that would be a video that would accompany it, which is basically just the blog post in video form. So my plan would be to record those videos, right? Post them to Facebook, boost or run ads on those posts, and then to get them back to my website. I just totally lost my train of thought and where I was going with that question. Set up like a retargeting pixel so that for those of you who don't know what a retargeting pixel is, every time somebody goes to a website, so in this case, my website, Facebook tracks them so that next time I can send just the people who went to my website an ad, right? So then have some sort of call to action, like download my price guide or something like that. Are you saying that should be a good plan, should work?
I think it's a good plan. I think The thing to think about here is like if you need 52 posts, or what are those 52 posts going to do? Do you need to promote every single one? And so maybe that would be perfect. It might be too much. So one thing I didn't mention earlier, and I'll just like directly answer this. People ask, how frequently should I blog? And I already said, you know, 4 times a year minimum, once a month recommended. But realistically, I think once per week is a good rhythm. But if I were blogging 4 times a month or once a week, the problem is you might start to have thin content on your site. So thin content is when Google says there's a lot of content on this site and not all of it's very good. And so eventually you might want to come back and cull some of that content, redirect it to content that is doing well or something like that. So it's okay to, like you said earlier, like you just throw things against the wall and see what sticks. That's not a bad strategy. Like you can totally do that. But at some point, you have to come back. So a good example of this is our mutual friend, Matt Druin.
Yeah.
He had about 1,000 posts on his blog or something like that. And
oh, my gosh.
And he had just like, you know, been doing stuff and never going back and cleaning it up. And I was like, dude, you have way too much content. A lot of this is not really that great quality. You need to do something about it. So I was like, just trust me. We did a little bit of a content audit and I figured out which ones were not getting any benefit from search. I said, just delete these. Delete them. If you have anything you want to redirect them to, fine, but probably just delete them. I think he deleted about 60% of his content all at once. That's not necessarily something I recommend, but the idea is he was trying to rank for Atlanta wedding photographers, which is a really competitive term. He's like page 3 or 4. He deleted 60% of his content. 3 or 4 weeks later, he was on page 1.
Wow.
Like it is not always going to happen that way. But the idea is that low quality content is a huge barrier to ranking. So making sure that you're not just putting out a bunch of stuff, that you're just doing it and leaving it there and never coming back and cleaning it up, is important. But what you're saying as far as like, you know, doing this once a week, it's still a good idea. I would just say maybe organize the topics so that you have, if you have 52 topics, they probably fall into 5 or 6 or even 10 categories of topics, right?
Oh, yes.
So then come up with those categories and make those your big cornerstone pages or posts. And so you have this one post that's like everything you need to know about getting ready for your wedding or something like that, right? And then that's your cornerstone. And these other blog posts or videos that you make them, it's a short post, but eventually the whole goal of it is to support that piece of cornerstone content. So you're going to add a snippet into that post that is everything you need to know about getting married. You're going to link to the blog post to get more, but on that blog post, you're also going to link back to the cornerstone content. And all these internal links from like, you know, 10 different posts on your site, they're all pointing back to everything you need to know to get married with that anchor text that says everything you need to know to get married or whatever. It's going to help that cornerstone content rank better because it's going to be seen as the most authoritative piece of content on your site about that topic. Whereas the other way, you might be spreading it thin. It's like, there's a lot of topics here about getting ready for your wedding. I don't know which one to show. Whereas if you tell Google specifically, show this one, all these other ones, like there are tips that support that one. I know it's kind of complicated to explain over a podcast, but the idea is that you need to take away is if you have a lot of similar content, try to group them into bigger posts that could be really strong cornerstone content.
I understood that perfectly. I think that you did a great job. I don't think that you're giving yourself enough credit there. I totally understood it. My next question would be for that, say that piece of cornerstone content, big blog post, everything you need to know to get married. Is that name, everything you need to know to get married, something that people should be searching? Because I don't know if many brides are searching everything we need to know to get married. But is that relevant if we have all those internal links?
Yeah, I was just throwing that out there as a random example. I do think it would make sense to try to frame it around a question that people would actually be searching for. Okay. It would help. I'm sure there's something though, you know, like if one of those is where should you get married? You know, maybe that you're so for example, my 7 favorite wedding venues post, right? If I were to do 7 different client weddings and each of those features one of those venues, the idea is that the post that says 7 of my favorite venues is going to rank for Columbia wedding venues, places to get married in Columbia, blah, blah, blah. The individual post is going to rank for the Millstone at Adams Pond, which is one particular venue, but it's still going to support the piece of Cornerstone content for all of the venues. So you can rank something for a specific question that's also part of a bigger topic or question. It does come down to researching, like, what are people searching? It's hard to come up with an example on the spot, but I'm sure that you'll be able to do it if you really spend some time searching Google.
Sure. Of course. Of course.
And by the way, magazines for wedding photographers, I feel like I don't want to make all the examples for wedding photographers, but for wedding photographers, wedding magazines are a really good source of inspiration. And here's like a really cool pro tip for you. Go to Google and type in something like wedding magazine covers and go to the image search and just look through all the covers. And you'll get like all these ideas for things that have been headline articles for them that you could incorporate. And then, like I said, start to group those into topics, and that'll give you some ideas about what questions people are actually asking.
I love it. That is a great idea. And I suddenly have decided not to do the 52 blog posts this year, but have several pieces of main content. And then, like you said, have probably weekly smaller posts that support that Cornerstone content linked to those things. That would be a whole lot easier for me, not having to do video probably on those smaller pieces, or maybe just not on the bigger piece, just on this. I'll figure it out.
So later. Here's what you would do quickly in 2019. It's not the same as 2012. What I would do is I would create those big pieces once a quarter, once a month, whatever. And then in between, I would spend a lot more effort on microblogging with social platforms, using Instagram, using YouTube. If you're making a video, you should absolutely be putting it on your YouTube channel for every one of these, and then still supporting that back to, like, you can rank with just a YouTube video. You don't need to have a blog post about a topic to necessarily rank. In fact, it might be easier at this point to rank with just a YouTube video. So if you made a video every week, put that on your YouTube channel, and then every month you make one summary of the four videos that you made, and that's your blog post. Like, that could be a killer strategy. Same thing, you could do it on Instagram, blogging, you know, putting a photo every day with certain hashtags around a certain topic, and then bring it all back together on a blog post. That would be the strategy I would be pursuing right now if I were still doing wedding photography.
Done. That's what I'm going to do, Corey. That was a great idea. And suddenly, it's like I already kind of put in the work on the back end to put everything together. And now just putting it all together like you just did right there made so much more sense and alleviates a lot of that workload as well. So thank you for sharing that. I definitely got my money's worth out of this interview today. So let's kind of move on now. You've been doing SEO for years, right? You were also a photographer, like we talked about. So I think that you are the perfect person to ask this question specifically, especially because I saw it in your brief that you sent over. What kind of content does Google want to see specifically from photographers? Because one of the ideas that I had was pictures, like we talked about in the beginning. Post a lot of pictures, right? Does Google want to see pictures? Do they want to see text? Do they want to see video? What kind of content does Google want tailored to photographers?
Yeah. So the best way to answer your question is to tell you that you need to go and do a Google search to figure that out, because it's going to vary per query. So whenever I type in best places to do engagement sessions, I'm probably going to get an answer box, and it probably has a list of entities in it. That's something that's very different than if I type in wedding photographer Columbia SC, because I'm probably going to get a map pack, and it's probably going to have locations from Google My Business. I might get a set of pictures in that search results. I might get a video carousel in those search results. You need to go and look and see what kind of SERP features Google is using, and that will give you a huge clue into what type of content they want to display for that. And then another thing I would do is look and see, are home pages ranking mostly? Are internal pages ranking mostly? So like just slash family, for example, on your site, or are blog posts ranking mostly? You'll find some queries where only blog posts are shown, right? So if they're like really informational or research based in nature, Google really leans towards showing blog posts with lots of text content. Whereas for photographers, people are like, you need more text. Yes, you do probably need more text. Most photographers do. But the idea is that the text should serve the intent of someone who's trying to complete a certain task. So if I'm searching for Indianapolis wedding photographer, I'm looking to hire a local business in Indianapolis who photographs weddings, right? So what are all the signals that I can send to Google to say, I'm a local business? Well, you got Google My Business set up. You've got an address in the city, if possible. You've got a phone number with the right area code. You've got photos that include landmarks in that city. You've got like all these things that kind of come together. You know, you keep building out from that. You have blog posts that mention specific things that are really what Indianapolis is known for. If you have all of that, you start to become locally relevant. You start to become known as a business by having like, this is the tricky part for photographers. Google My Business with a physical address makes a big difference in showing up for these kinds of local queries. And a lot of people don't have that. It's a home address. They don't have a studio. They just don't want to show their home address, whatever. And so I know that's getting into a lot of a different topic, but the idea here is that you have to figure out what's important to a particular query. And when it comes to ranking for Indianapolis wedding photographer, it's going to be a different set of factors that Google is weighing than whenever it comes to ranking for best places to have your wedding makeup done in Indianapolis.
Right.
They're probably going to show very different content for those two queries.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Right.
Probably gonna be blog posts in that case. But you know, if I typed in where to have my makeup done for my wedding in Indianapolis, it's a really long thing. But you know, you get the idea. It's something like that versus wedding makeup inspiration. You see how those two are also going to have two very different intents. The person who typed in inspiration, they absolutely want to see more pictures, right? And so if you typed in wedding makeup inspiration Indianapolis, you're probably going to, I haven't done it, but you're probably going to get a larger image set on the organic search. So if you just do a regular Google search, you're probably going to get more multiple rows of image results there. And that's how to tell you, like, you need to have a page that has some strong images that are similar to the ones shown in the image. That's the kind of thing people don't necessarily think about. If I go to Google and I type in, this is like, that's such a random example, but I'm gonna use it again, like wedding makeup inspiration Indianapolis, and I see 10 images that show up there, and they're all close-ups of a bride's face, every single one of them. And I'm trying to optimize with my alt text and my page and all this stuff that's like farther away, you know, full body shots, something like that. I'm missing the mark because Google knows I need to have a full face in this photo. Google's image recognition these days is insanely good. So they're going to look for patterns, and the machines are doing this, by the way. It's not like humans. So,
right, yeah.
So the machines can see close up of a face, close up of a face, close up of a face. And if yours isn't a close up of a face, they're gonna be like, doesn't fit. And that's the kind of thing, like if you're asking what kind of content does Google want to see, typically right now, one of the best things you can do is look at the current body of content that's ranking and do something that's either A, similar to that, or B, very different than that, that serves an intent that you know is there that Google just hasn't started to serve yet.
I gotcha. This is a lot, right?
Yeah.
I knew... I knew before this interview that it was going to be a really hard interview for three reasons. One of them is that there's no one size fits all.
No.
Right. The second one is that SEO it can't be personalized, this interview right here.
Yep.
And the last one is that SEO is always changing. Right. So for those three reasons, I knew that this was going to be a hard interview, but I know that I picked up a lot of great information here, and I think that you shared a lot of great information that that beginners are going to understand as well. And if they don't, it's going to inspire them to learn more, I hope. I think that's going to be the case.
Yeah, and I would love to hear people come into your group and ask, like, okay, you talked a lot about wedding examples, but you didn't use a single boudoir example. Can you give some of those? I'd be happy to answer those kinds of questions.
So you heard it. Corey's already in the group, so just go ahead and come into the group and ask those questions. But I want to know, before I let you go, I want to know, since you teach SEO to photographers, you've been a photographer, what do you think is the hardest thing about SEO for photographers to grasp, to understand?
I think that's a really good question. I think that photographers usually just think about the the basics, like keywords, putting in keywords and tags. And people are always asking me, like, can you just do my SEO for me? And they think I'm going to like go into the back end and do some like advanced stuff and add some random tags to things, and that's going to make them rank. And I think that they're really missing the entire point altogether. I've tried to talk about it quite a few times here, but the entire point of SEO is to figure out what people are searching for and to serve that, the intent behind that search. Whenever I go and type something into Google, what do I actually want to do? What do I actually want to know? If I want to know how much does it cost to hire an Indianapolis wedding photographer, you need to include something about pricing on that page, or you're not answering the intent behind the search. And I think that the other big thing that really comes with a lot of photographers is they have multiple things they're trying to target. They're trying to target wedding photography and family photography and newborn photography. And organizing their site in a way that doesn't put all of that onto one page, but makes their internal pages strong enough to rank for those terms, it can be mind-boggling even for me to come up with structures for people that they can follow. I think that's one of the things that it's tough. It's tough to come up with something that really works well for the type of client that you're trying to attract and the way that you want to show your work, but also makes technical sense to a search engine and gives the signals that they need to see. So those are the hardest things. People just miss the point and they think it's about tags and keywords. And of course that's part of it, but it's not the main point. And then site structure just being completely off.
Okay. Well, there you have it. Even though I learned a lot from this, this interview, I know that I still need help when it comes to SEO. I'm sure the people listening still need help when it comes to SEO. So Corey, wrap this up. Where can they find you online and get help if they need it?
Yeah, so website is fuelyourphotos.com. Have a really active Facebook group. Fuel Your Photos is the name of it. You can probably find it by searching. And I have, if you go to the website, fuelyourphotos.com, I have a tab for services. I have a tab for a course that's launching here in a few weeks. So a lot of stuff there on the website and in the group.
If you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed right now, I totally understand, right? I think as a beginner, you know that you probably should have a website, but you don't exactly know what to do with that website. And now hearing a lot of terms that maybe you haven't heard before can feel like a lot. But I really hope that you didn't tune out, because if you listen to Corey's message, what he said is invaluable, right? He got into some of the technicals, but some of the bigger picture ideas, and this was definitely my biggest takeaway, right? When I first started blogging, I thought that each blog post was kind of like its own entity, right? It was its own thing. That's it. I made it. It's done. That's its thing. Whatever happens to it happens to it. I was no longer in control of its destiny. That was the thing, right? But what Corey shared, and he really changed, you know, my perspective on thing is, think about if Google came to you and said, hey, Raymond, you know, what's the one piece of content that you want us to show of yours if somebody comes looking for wedding photography or engagement photography? And suddenly it's like, wow, well, there's a lot of information. It's not just one blog post. You know, if somebody's searching for wedding photography in Indianapolis, I don't want them to see a guide to getting, you know, a style guide. You know, maybe that would help some of them. If that's what they're searching for, that's what I want them to find. But if they're searching for like wedding photography or engagement photography in Indianapolis, I want to show them a lot more information. And creating one post, one piece of cornerstone content that is like, you know, you said you're engaged. Now it's time to start planning your engagement session. First thing that you need to do is figure out, you know, where you're gonna have your engagement session. And if you're looking for ideas, here's my other blog post, a million, you know, different locations around Indianapolis to have your engagement photos. And now once you pick your location, now you got to think about, you know, what you're going to wear. So here's my styling guide for engagement photos in Indianapolis for the winter, the summer, you know, the fall, the autumn, you know, whatever it is. And then once you pick out that, now you got to figure out if you want, you know, what sorts of props you want, what sorts of photos you want, you know, and then give information on that as well. And suddenly, this one article, which is just bullet points, right? It's like pick a location, figure out what you're going to wear, you know, and then any additionals is now so much more because it's linked to other blog posts on my site that they can find helpful information. And that changed the way that I think about my blog. And Corey, for that, I cannot thank you enough. Honestly, I can't. I've been working feverishly ever since our interview to kind of change up things on my website to ensure that well, I guess not to ensure, I guess that's the wrong word, but like to kind of fit this mold that Google is looking for, because not even just Google, just brides, right? Like it makes sense. If you put out a blog post that's like, hey, you know, you need to pick a location, you need to figure out what you're going to wear, you need to figure out all the extras, and then that's it. You didn't give any of that extra info. Like, you didn't link to, like, you have those blog posts, but you didn't link to them. Suddenly, you're not thinking about the visitor. You're thinking about, you know, yourself. You're just hoping for more website clicks, and that's it. But linking those other blogs is helpful to them, and that is what is obviously most important. So, Corey, again, thank you so much for coming on. And if you have any questions for Corey, if you're listening and you have any questions for Corey, like Corey said at the end of the interview there, he will be in the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group, which if you're in it right now, you're good. You're set. You can go ahead and ask away. But if you're not in it, again, just search Google for Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group. Maybe you don't need the word Facebook group in there, but did I say search Google for a Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group? I wonder if that works. Anyway, try that. And if it doesn't, go to Facebook and search Beginner Photography Podcast. Feel free to join. Answer 3 questions. That's it. I just need to confirm that you're human and that you really want to be in the group. And if you don't answer those 3 questions, you're not getting in. No ifs, ands, or buts. Sorry about you. Okay. So that is it for this week. Until next week, I want you to get out. I want you to keep shooting. I want you to focus on yourself. And I want you to stay safe. All right? That's it. I love y'all.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please leave us a review in iTunes or your favorite podcast player. And continue the conversation with Raymond and other listeners of the podcast by joining the Beginner Photography Podcast Facebook group today. Thank you. We'll see you again next week.